To another exciting episode of the Click Nation's Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim D-O-double-G. And I'm joined by the man from PopCultureNetwork.com. Follow him on Twitter at PCN_dirt.
Hi, Mom.
Hi, Mom. And we also have the man behind the sound effects. You can follow him on Twitter at Agent_70.
What's up, everybody?
Or for those that are watching the video, Nicholas Fury.
That's right.
And you can follow me on Twitter at TimDOGG98 and the Click Nation account at TheClickNation. And, of course, go to theclicknation.com to follow and read all the previous Comic Book Chronicle reviews, the Comic Book Chronicle podcast episodes, and much more. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/theclicknation. Add us to your Google Plus circles. Just search for The Click Nation under Google Plus. Join the community, The Click Nation community. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/TheClickNation. We're on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. And if you ever have any email you want to have read on a future show, send that on over to theclicknation@gmail.com. So it is New York Comic Con 2013 season. Lots of news. Breaking news. Exciting events. Yada, yada, yada. And with that, we will discuss some of the news. Actually, before we get to New York Comic Con news, we'll have discuss some of the stuff that broke Friday and earlier this week. I'm going to skip the Marvel teasers because we'll end up just talking about those next week after it's announced what all the teasers are for. And so DC announced 18-issue crossover event called Forever Evil Blight, which is going to cross over into Justice League Dark, Constantine, Trinity of Sin, Pandora, and Trinity of Sin, The Phantom Stranger. And let me go ahead and add Roddy Cat to the podcast because he's actually available tonight. I forgot he said he was going.
Cool.
Do that real quick. So yeah, Forever Evil Blight is going to introduce a new villain called Blight. Go figure. And it, of course, deals with the mystical side of the DC universe, at least as far as the Justice League corner is concerned. So you have Justice League Dark, Constantine, Trinity of Sin, Pandora, and Trinity of Sin, The Phantom Stranger. So let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 books. 18, like I said, 18 issues is a long crossover. Had to see what takes place with all that. as Roddy Cat joins the show. As we get situated over there.
Welcome.
Probably can't hear us yet, but that's fine.
We'll blow the trumpets when he comes.
Do we have any thoughts on Forever Evil Blight?
This says it all, doesn't it? Goodness gracious.
Dirt wants to say something.
No, I was just going to say, I don't know that I have anything against it. I mean, it makes sense that those books would tie together.
Or at least get a kind of a push, right?
Right. Well, Justice League Dark, Constantine's part of that. Pandora and Phantom Stranger tie into it. So, you know, I don't think it's really one big deal one way or the other, but, you know.
Okay. Let's see what else we have here. Robert Kirkman earlier this week released some teaser images for a new horror comic that he's doing called Outcast under his Skybound Image imprint.
Subtitled Aquamini.
Did you hear about the other new zombie book coming out?
No.
Marvel is doing a
yes, that's right.
Empire of the Dead comic, which will be written by George Romero, the guy who did Night of the Living Dead. Oh, yeah. But what makes this one a little bit different, besides the fact that it's all, you know, centered around New York City, is the fact that it's a year. So it's like the zombie apocalypse happens, and then several years down the road is when this story starts. So it's not one of those, like you've gotten a million times, everyone's running around, oh my gosh, Freddy, I thought you were dead. And then he bites their face off. It's, you know, he's basically taking the Walking Dead mold, where he's probably read some of the more recent stuff about civilization trying to rebuild itself. And then, oh, that's kind of interesting. And he's doing his own take on that part of it.
Okay.
We'll see if his zombies can sprint.
I hope not.
You know?
Ugh.
See what else we have. Not really comic book news, but Star Wars, a teaser for Star Wars Rebels was released. This is a new animated cartoon coming to Disney XD, taking place of Star Wars Clone Wars, which was on Cartoon Network. Mm-hmm. Also have, let's see, so DC has Superman and Chain, which is the new Superman comic from the superstar team of Jim Lee and Scott Snyder. And news came out that at least right now it's only slated to run for 9 issues.
They actually clarified that later on by saying that the initial arc with Snyder and Jim Lee, they said would probably go somewhere around 9 or 10 issues. They weren't really sure. They were just going to feel it out as they go. But the series will continue after them. So a different creative team may come in, or Snyder may write a new arc with a different artist or something like that. But Jim Lee wants to work on other projects. It's one of the things he's been doing at DC, is just kind of moving around from character to character and storyline, because he gets to play with all the toys. So the series will keep going, but the creative team will just change up at some point.
Can you guys hear me?
Yep.
Can.
Oh, cool. Great.
Friday Cat, everybody.
Welcome.
Yeah, hello, hello, everybody.
So we were just going through the news. You haven't missed much.
Okay.
I guess as far as Superman and Chain goes, most people probably would have assumed that Lee and Snyder wouldn't stay on the book long term.
Or at least Lee.
I can see Snyder staying as writer because, I mean, he's, even though he has some more stuff announced that was today from him, we'll get to that in a little bit.
Cool.
But let's see. So Marvel Disney/Disney announced a new comics line based on Disney park attractions. A 5-art limited series called Disney Kingdom's Seekers of the Weird. Number one will be the first launch. Maybe Dirt's kids will enjoy that.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Although we've never taken them to Disney, so I don't think they really care about the rides.
Yeah.
You know.
This is just a primer for when you do take them.
If it doesn't have Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, I'm not interested.
And let's see, no more news. Dynamite and Dark Horse are joining forces for a Red Sonja Conan crossover. I actually need to start trying some Dynamite books out once in a while.
It makes sense because they made that deal, a month or two ago where Dark Horse is distributing Dynamite books through their digital bookstore. So the fact that they've got something in the works publishing together doesn't, surprise anybody.
Question for you, Dirk. Where is your microphone at?
Is it too far away?
Yeah, I was going to say you're kind of low.
Or distant.
I was looking for it on your headset, but it's going to actual physical yeah. Variety.
I've got plugged into a cord that's not very long. I'm afraid I'm going to pull it out.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it sounds better now. Probably because you're leaning forward, though. Okay. Just check.
How's this?
Oh.
Feedback.
I could also talk a little louder.
Yeah, you could do that, too. So now onto the news that broke today on the first day of New York Comic Con. There's going to be a weekly Batman comic book coming out from DC called Batman Eternal, which is going to have Scott Snyder is going to be the architect for it because he's the architect of all things Batman nowadays. And I don't feel like clicking the link, but off the top of my head, the rotating writers will be Snyder, James Tynion IV, Ray Fox, and Tim Seeley. And supposedly he's going to change the Batman mythos forever and other things like that. They pronounce
it the next time they break it.
Yeah. Any thoughts on this?
I'm kind of wondering, because Snyder's doing all the stuff with Zero, changing the history of Batman a little bit and changing the dynamic between himself and Bruce and Joker and all that kind of stuff. So I kind of was the idea of kind of covering that time that they've missed with the New 52, have the origin of Batman and then five other stuff going on. So I wonder if they flesh out some of that stuff that wasn't in the New 52 yet. And the idea that he's bringing in some of these other writers who have done work on the other Bat are going to touch on some of those characters.
Has Ray Fox written Batman before? Or is he writing Batman?
Ray Fox. Let me see here.
What if
he did Legends? Did he do something with Legends?
Oh, okay. Maybe some one of the digital books, maybe. I guess, and to touch on your point about Zero Year, they said when this launches is when Zero Year ends. So it's timed perfectly for that, and then it's going to like pick up whatever happens at the end of Zero Year. I guess this is going to sort of pick up right from there and keep going forward. And they also on that.
Oh, he did the.
TikTok.
Are we still looking for this?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Matter. Yeah, you're a little choppy, though.
You were chopping up earlier, but...
Lips moving, but I don't hear anything.
Can you hear us?
Uh-oh.
I can hear you guys fine. He wrote a fill-in issue of Batgirl after Robin died, when they had that whole Gail Simone is off the book on the book thing, and he also did the Riddler tie-in for Villains Month that just happened.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah, this is...
So there you go.
Yeah, as Dirt was saying, this is just a way for Snyder's version of the Batman, mythos to be presented even quicker. They'll probably be able to establish the Batman universe a lot faster now if they're putting out this weekly book. And, of course...
Dorgekis has a question. He said, going back to Star Wars Rebels, he says, is Lucas a major influence in Star Wars Rebels? Projects with Lucas' direct involvement tend to be horrid. I don't think he's directly tied to it, but of course he's the overseer of all things Star Wars, if that makes sense. Just like with Clone Wars, because I don't think he was directly involved with Clone Wars besides them running their ideas by him.
Yeah, if anything, he's probably a consultant, but I don't think, from the last thing I read, I don't think he has any direct lines on it.
I'll give it a try, even though I tend to dismiss everything that's on Disney XD nowadays. Superhero related.
Really?
Yeah, I don't watch any of that stuff anymore.
Oh.
What, yeah, the Canto Mountains. So, I mean, forget that series.
Which one?
The canceled Tron, the Tron Uprising.
Yeah, I did like Tron. I watched it once.
They didn't renew it.
But like,
that was good. It was a good series.
I liked Ultimate Spider-Man kinda in the beginning, but it just kinda, I got tired of it.
Petered out a little.
Yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Avengers Assemble is kinda, eh.
It's on the silly side, but I appreciate watching it. I enjoy it. I enjoy it for what it is.
It's all on the silly side, which is probably why I don't watch it anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can't be, you can't be looking for like serious, anything that's, overly serious watching this. It's just fun. It's meant to be, enticing for kids and, entertaining for adults. That's about it.
That's the main point. As long as the kids watch it, it'll stay on.
Hope they do.
I'm really trash. I just don't watch it anymore.
All right. So what else we got in news?
I didn't write this down, so I'm going to try to do it off the top of my head. But Blee and Cole had an article discussing basically that they were supposedly out at one of the bars last night with some people at DC and got some tips about the announced Batman weekly book today. And supposedly it's going to be 3 weekly books, a Superman one, a Batman one, and then a 5 years later book where...
Jeez.
I guess when Forever Evil ends or... They said September, so maybe it's next year. Maybe it's planned for next year, sometime next year, late next year. They're going to jump all the books ahead a month. I guess that's going to be the hook for next year, September. Whatever.
The crossover event?
The 3-year special event thing they do every year to commemorate the new 52. They're going to jump the books a year ahead 5 years. For a month, just for 1 month. And then I guess that's going to spawn some weekly book where they try to fill in the gaps. Because supposedly they said they thought about making the weekly book go back into the past and fill in the gaps from like that 5-year period where the new 52 started to the current day. Instead, they changed their mind. Instead of doing the past, they want to do the future.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know what that gets?
But those plans could change.
Yeah.
Sure.
If they pull it off editorially, I think it would be very interesting. The question is whether or not they can plan things out. Because it's like Peter, that had some very interesting twists in it, and there was a lot of great storytelling in that, but then it kind of fell apart.
What book are you talking about?
In DC, when they did the 1 year later.
Oh, 1 year later, okay.
They did that whole jump a couple years ago where they jumped ahead a year, Like, there was some interesting stuff that happened because of that, but new writers came in eventually, and they kind of worked away from that and kind of lost that feeling that there was something special going on, and it just kind of faded away. So it's one of those things that if editorial can get the jump on it, they can plan it out correctly, and they can, parse it correctly, then it'll be interesting, but... you just have to wait and see how well it's executed.
Okay.
All right.
And the other piece of Batman-related news that that was released today on USA Today, along with the Batman Eternal, was the new Detective Comics creative team will be Francis Manapul and Brian Bucciolato from The Flash.
So that's what they left The Flash
for. And they start in March of next
year. That's interesting. I wonder what the art's going to look like on that.
One of the things that they've been talking about, and they've slowly been kind of hinting, and there have been rumors behind the scenes at DC, was talking about how did Marvel Now, they took creators and swapped them around to different books, took the creative teams that were working on one title and switched them to another title. And the idea is that DC was going to try something like that. And apparently this is the first announcement of taking the Flash team and moving them to Detective Comics. And so it's like nobody is going to lose a job or pushed out or anything. It's everybody's going to get shuffled around with the idea that you'll get some fresh blood, some fresh ideas coming through and, you know, perk things up and make things, you know, keep it interesting. Because a lot of times when you have the same writers doing the same stuff for, you know, now they're on their second year, it can kind of start to, you know, wear down. They've done everything they wanted to do. And, you know, this is a chance to do something different and exciting.
They'll probably do all the titles except for Batman, because they'll probably keep Snyder and Capullo on that as long as they can.
Yeah.
As long as they want to keep doing it.
Right.
I'm trying to think,
there was also the announcement. Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm trying to think, are there any other long-running creative teams besides The Flash? Because it seemed like...
Well, Snyder and Capullo on Batman.
Well, yes. Besides, those two. Like, Gail Simone, get her off Batgirl finally. But who else is there? I guess the Wonder Woman creative team, perhaps?
Well, the Aquaman team was a Pelletier and Jeff Johns, right?
Yeah, but they already shuffled that around to Jeff Parker.
Right.
I think just the big books.
I don't pay that much attention to who's doing them is the problem.
Like Justice League, like you see, Justice League,
is Jeff Johns is
doing that.
And Ivan Reis, right?
They got a new artist, but Jeff Johns is still doing it. Justice League of America, or Justice League of Canada, as it's about to be renamed. Jeff Lemire is taking that over. I'm just trying to think of the big name books. Who else am I missing? Green Lantern, they just reshuffled everyone.
Yeah. Greg Hurwitz, I think, has been doing The Dark Knight ever since the first six-issue arc with Finch. I think he's been doing it since then.
Yeah, it's more. I don't know. I guess we'll wait to see if actually. I guess it would be cool if they did a reshuffling like that.
Just to get some fresh takes on things.
Well, and it's also nice to see, you know, art styles change along with it. Because a lot of times they change writers, but you don't really notice the change in the book because they keep the same tone. You know, they try to make it somewhat seamless. But when you take a writer and artist, I mean, especially something like Flash, where it stands out from the rest because it does look different, and then suddenly you throw it into a Detective Comics, you're taking this dark, gritty book and giving it that kind of soft-painted feel that Flash has to it. You know, it's going to change the whole tone of the book, change the whole feel of the book, and it's going to be interesting to see what their take is on it.
And there is a
Agreed.
Image released for it, so you can see... Francis Manapul's Batman. I actually have it as the image for the post for this show. So check that out on theclicknation.com, people.
Did you see the announcement for Detective Comics 27?
I did, but I didn't write that down, so I'm glad you brought that up.
Okay. It's going to be 96 pages because, of course, Detective Comics 27 was the first appearance of Batman, so they're doing the big anniversary special. 96 pages, and it's going to be Frank Miller is going to be coming back to it. It'll have Neil Adams, Paul Dini, Greg Hurwitz, Peter Tomasi, Dustin Nguyen, Francesco Francavilla, and Brad Meltzer is actually coming back for this. It's also going to have variant covers from Jim Lee, Greg Capullo, Chris Burnham, Kelly Jones, Patrick Gleason, and Mike Allred. So that's they're doing a pretty big deal about that.
Sounds cool.
Oh yeah, next year is Batman's 75th anniversary. think. Or some big anniversary number is next year, too. So that's the reason why sort of all this
39,
all this big Batman stuff is taking place. And other news, there's a new Terminator comic coming to Dark Horse, for those who care. And then there's a lot of other Dark Horse, Dynamite news. Dynamite has some big project coming that they had teasers for with Mark Waid and Greg Pak and two other gentlemen I don't remember.
Did you see the announcement of the new multiverse line of figures from DC?
I didn't.
DC and Mattel are doing this new line of 4-inch figures, so basically like G.I. Joe size figures, and they're all based on the movie, and later they'll get into TV versions of the characters of the DC universe. So they're going to start with Batman, Batman Returns, Superman, Superman 2, and so you're going to get Michael Keaton, you're going to get Catwoman, Michelle Pfeiffer, you're going to get Danny DeVito's Penguin, you're going to get the Terrence Stamp Zod, you're going to get the Christopher Reeve Superman. So, and it's, they got the rights to the likenesses for all these people, so they can actually look like the actors from the movies.
But in four inch scale, right? Like G.I. Joe style or Marvel Universe type scale.
Right.
That's a little small. It's a shame that it's not like Marvel Legends scale.
Well, they've done some of those in the bigger size. And you can also, if you really want like big figures, you can get the Hot Toys figures that are like 12
inches. Right, like small. Eclectic.
Right. But, I mean, this is going to be a more, you know, affordable line, I guess sure. You could say.
Okay. That's all I had for news as far as...
Well, I have some bad news. We can break it on the show. The bad news is... For the first time since the New York Comic Con has been at the Jacob Javits Center, Agent_70 is probably not going to make it to a single day of New York Comic Con. So sad. So sad.
I like that you broke the news yourself and queued up the sad.
That's how I feel, man. I'm sitting on my desk today like, I can't believe this is actually going to happen. I'm actually going to miss it. It sucks.
But never fret. Mm.
Well, actually, I have...
Okay. What's that?
I was going to say, never fret.
Go ahead, Rod, again.
Listeners and viewers, because, well, of course, we will be breaking all the news next week that whatever news from Comic-Con from this week we'll discuss next week. And I have some agents that I've dispatched that are going to the show, so they'll be providing me with pictures and news, and I'll be making sure to post all that on the website. Now, Roddy Cat.
Yeah, we've got a couple people going as well, so we'll have some photos in there too.
Okay, cool. Well, I was about to say, on that, I have some news then. Just in case you can't make it to NYCC, Twitch is having live streams of it. So if you go to twitch.tv/NYCC live, looks like. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, NYCC. Then the guests are going to do at least, well, they got two streams up, but if you go to that one, it will probably point to the other one. Not sure what they're going to be doing, but it's probably going to be like main stage stuff.
Put that link in the chat.
I will do that right now.
So I can save that after the show.
All right, good.
All right. One thing here real quick is Image announced today that Walking Dead 115, which released this week with like 11 different covers or 13 right. different covers or whatever, it has sold through the distributor 350,000 copies.
That's pretty good.
That's a very good number.
That's very good.
In the numbers that we see nowadays, right, comparatively speaking.
And then also, Comixology did a survey of comic book readers, and they released an infographic talking about some of the digital comics trends and reading trends. 80% of people read digital comics on a tablet, 44% on a computer, 36% on their phone, but 55% overall admit that they read on the toilet. Which, yeah, I mean, I can see that.
I have a question for Comixology. When they're going to start
adding... How do they know you read on the toilet?
Because they asked.
I took that survey, and they had that question and a couple of other ones, including that one down at the bottom about being pirates or not, which were kind of funny.
But, I was going to say...
Yeah, last year, about 50% said that they had pirated digital comics, and this year it's down to 25%.
Yarr!
I was going to say, when is Comixology going to get with Diamond or whoever does the sales numbers each month and add digital sales into the final sales each month? I still don't believe that hasn't been done yet.
Well, they don't want to do it. A lot of companies don't want to put out the numbers of what they sell digitally just because retailers hate digital comics.
But then they always look at the sales numbers and like, this book's underselling. What if it's not if you add in the digital sales?
They have some of those numbers. They're just not selling. They're not sharing on the retail level. You know, like they're not sharing it in public so that the retailers can see it.
Oh. Well, as long as that's taken into account when it's time to like cancel books and whatnot for low sales. Something tells me that they're not counting digital though. I think they're just being old school farts.
No, I think they're counting it. They have to be. You know, that's the part of the bottom line.
I'll be positive and assume that then.
All righty.
Any other news?
Actually, yeah, I do have one more thing. Set your DVRs for October 15th on PBS. Yeah. There will be...
Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. I saw this.
Yeah, there was going to be a three-part series on the history of comic book heroes and their impact on the... called Superheroes and Neverending Battle. I think it looks like there's going to be a book also called Superheroes, Capes, Cows, and the Creation of the Comic Book Culture. And they'll have interviews with Stan Lee, of course, Michael Chabon, Grant Morrison, Adam West, and a bunch of others. Looks like.
Yes, tune in to PBS for a change.
They've actually had a couple of decent... documentaries in the past, those, granted, I haven't seen this one, but there was the one on Wonder Woman, like, probably about 3 or 4 months ago. And I'm drawing a blank on the other one, but they've had a couple of comic-related documentaries.
Cool. I did see that. I'm glad you remembered to bring that up. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing that. You know, three-part?
Yeah, it's three-part.
Right, so it's supposed to be an hour each time?
I guess so. Didn't see that.
Well, either way, I'm looking forward to it. That's pretty cool.
I just noticed we lost Dirt.
Yeah, he dropped out for a second. So before we go into the comics, do you guys want to do a quick review of this week's episode of Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Yes, because I have it on my list of things to talk about.
Cool.
So yes, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. episode 3 aired this week. Introduce Graviton, who I was not familiar with before the show, because I don't read Thunderbolts or anything else he had appeared in. Episode seemed like it was fine. I don't know. I never really have much to say after these episodes of S.H.I.E.L.D.
My biggest problem right now with the show is with some of the acting.
Yeah.
I think some of the acting is really hard. Like, I hate to say this, but... You know, the actor that plays Phil Coulson, Clark Gregg, Ming-Na Wen, you know, the agent, the lady, the actress that plays Melinda May. I was going to say, I want to call her Deb Chen, but that was her character on ER. Mm-hmm. You know, Melinda May, like, basically the seasoned actors are the ones who are actually acting, and the other ones I just don't buy. And it's kind of sad.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's a huge drop-off.
Yeah, and I think, Tim, you said it last week about Coulson being the lead, basically, in this. Mm-hmm. How doesn't seem to be a good fit for him to kind of be the lead. But I'm kind of wondering, especially after last night, because it was like there were a couple of things that I was thinking that exact same thing. And there was a couple of things like, how in the world are you going on an extraction in a three-piece suit? You know, when you haven't had done, when you haven't done field work in I don't know how long, which that got brought up. But, you know, there was a certain things about the show. I was like, all right, fine. I know they're trying to build out his character a little bit more, but it just seems a little off to, off.
Well, that character. I didn't mind because I think that's actually part of the storyline.
Right.
Dirt, welcome back. We're talking Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Still haven't watched it.
Okay, so put us all on mute.
It's all right.
You sound better now that you're back.
Yeah, well, I had a whole bunch of windows open, and I was trying to close them, and a couple of them got stuck and wouldn't move, and suddenly the whole thing just shut down.
I know that feeling.
It's actually not a bad show. It's just not incredibly in-depth, I guess, at this point. But it's, I guess they're still setting things up in a way.
And Dirt, I was just saying that my biggest gripe with the show is that the actors we're less familiar with are just not acting very well. You know, their performances are not very good. You know, the established actors are the ones that I can actually buy, and you know, I can buy into their performances. You know, and there's one too many British people on this show. For real. Like this chick, right? She has a great line in the first episode. I'm not spoilers, just thank you for a poor girl. She has this great line where she says, "I'm not Hermione," and I laughed. It's a great line. But the other British dude that she's, you know, that she's paired with is just one too many British people.
Oh yeah, because both of them get to talking, and it's like, okay, they're going 50 miles an hour.
It's like Downton Abbey Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know what I'm saying?
As Dork Geeka says, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. only keeps him interested because of Sky.
She was looking good in that, that dress this week.
Yes, got her in the red dress, highlight of the show.
And running too, Baywatch style.
Can I just say I hate Agent Ward? He's freaking annoying.
Oh, yeah, his acting is terrible.
Yeah, I was going to say, you brought up bad acting. His is the worst.
His acting is pretty bad. I can't believe that they're trying to make him out to be like an action, like romantic lead type guy.
Got him looking like Captain America out there.
It's pretty bad.
But so yeah, we have our first supervillain of the show.
Featured supervillain. They're still developing it.
Yeah, featured supervillain with powers.
Right.
If you stay to the not after credit scene because it doesn't air after the credits. But enough for that. Now on to a good show. Season 2 premiered and it was awesome.
Dirt, do you watch this show, or is it because the guys run around with no shirts on? You don't watch it.
Yeah, I watched the first episode of it way back when, and I mean it was okay, but it just struck me as it's a CW show, so it's built on relationships and somebody's dating somebody's sister, and you know that same type of stuff they did with Smallville that I didn't really care about. So.
All right, Tim, well, tell us why you like it, because I don't watch this show. How about you, Ruddycat?
I've seen the first three episodes of the first season, and I said I'd come back to it, but never have.
Wait. All right, Tim, you're running solo on this.
I like the jumping back and forth from the island, showing his past on the island to the current day. The action sequences with Arrow and the bad guys are pretty good, actually. He's assembled his own team to help him. He's got the techie girl, and he's got his bodyguard Diggle, who's helping him. And of course,
what is this, DC Agents of Arrow?
Yeah. And Roy Harper was introduced at the end, near the end of last season, so eventually he should join the squad. He's dating his sister right now, who her nickname's Speedy.
They made Speedy a girl? Okay, that's it. I'm out.
That's her nickname. And they finally teased that. So basically the theme was he didn't want to be the Arrow anymore because all these people died at the end of last season, and he sort of blames himself. And he thought if he was a vigilante, all he was good for was killing And of course, he got over that by the end of the episode and realized, you know, I can still do good in Starling City and not have to kill everyone. And he sort of at the end, he's contemplating coming up with another alias besides the Hood. So they show him holding the Green Arrow and looking at it, and then the show goes off.
Oh.
Dun, dun, dun.
And then what should be interesting to watch this season is there's going to be a whole bunch of guest appearances by DC characters. You know, there was a lot last year, but it seems like they're upping it this year. Actually, I can't even say they're upping it, because, I mean, last year they had Deadshot and Huntress and Deathstroke, of course. So this year we'll have Bronze, like next episode is Bronze Tiger and one of the Black Canaries, because the one that becomes his like love interest in the comic books, her name's Laurel Lance, and she's an attorney, I believe, but she of course doesn't don a Black Canary outfit. So that's why Arrow is awesome.
Huh.
Okay.
And Dorkikas had some tweets.
Yeah, I was about to say, I just saw a tweet from Dorkikas that says, the S.H.I.E.L.D. nerds are believable. Oh, yeah, I believe them, but they're one too many British people. That's all I got to say.
He also asked, why are digital comics as much as print comics? Makes no sense.
A lot goes back to the retailers. The retailers hate the idea of digital. The problem is when you've got print comics and you go to the store and you buy the print comics, you might buy something else from the store. If they got toys, you might pick up a toy. If there are other series you like, and then you'll come back and then there's business. But if you buy your comic directly from Comixology, you're not going to the store. So the local retailer isn't getting any of that money. And so they want the price to be on par so that, you know, there's not an incentive to buy the digital over the print because you're saving money necessarily. They want the incentive to be that you pay the same price, you get a paper copy, so you buy that from your local store. So it's because of the retailers. When the print industry starts to die off, if it ever actually does, if that starts to really, you know, tank, then you might see the digital prices actually come down as they don't worry about the retailers. But so far, you know, retailers are such a big part of the chain of money that comes into their coffers that they don't want to alienate the retailers and push them all out the door right now.
Yep. So that sums up our TV talk for the week. I will say, after Arrow was over, CW premiered a new show called The Tomorrow People, which is basically like their version of Heroes on CW, and it was good too.
For the first season.
Yeah, we'll see. In the first episode, there was actually kind of a twist at the end. They could have went the what's the word I'm looking for? The lazy route with the storytelling, but they gave it kind of a twist. Like there's this kid that, of course, his powers are starting to evolve, and he doesn't understand. Of course, the Tomorrow People that already exist take him in and show him, you know, this is what's going on. Supposedly, I guess everyone has powers to start with T: telepathy, telekinesis, teleporting. 3 T's they call it. So all the Tomorrow People have those powers, and his powers are, even though he's just now getting his are of course stronger than everyone, because his dad is like the great Tomorrow person or whatever. And there's this secret agency that's trying to capture them. The agency, I think they call them. And instead of running off with the Tomorrow People to try to stop the agency, he goes to work for the agency, because the leader, the guy over the agency, is actually his uncle. And that's the reason his uncle founded the agency, because he saw how the powers affected his brother, so he became this like researcher of science and trying to find a way to help them or whatever. But yeah, he's with the bad guys instead of with his people.
For how long?
I thought that was a nice little twist. at least going into the season. And it, supposedly it got great ratings for CW too, so.
Here's a question, Tim. Have you seen, doesn't sound like it is, but have you seen the show Misfits?
No. That sounds familiar, though. Is that on Sci-Fi?
It's, I don't know. It is on Hulu, though. It's a British show where these teens, I guess, were doing community service, and they get struck by lightning and get powers, and I think it's probably about to go off the air pretty soon because it's been on for like 5 series or something. It kind of sounded like that until you started describing it a little bit more. But
I do have Hulu Plus, so I guess I can check that out.
Yeah. It's, I mean, from what I've seen of it, it's a pretty decent show.
Okay. And that should do it for TV Talk. So now we can get into this week's books. Yay! First up, I'm jumping to Boom.
No, wait, go back.
Ah! I was like, I'm going to jump to Boom, but if anyone has something else they want to mention.
We got Afterlife with Arch number one.
I was hoping somebody was going to bring that up.
Am I the only one who read it?
Yeah.
All right, so basically, Jughead's dog.
Oh, God.
Jughead's.
Already?
Yes.
They killed Hot Dog.
Hot Dog dies.
What?
And Jughead is, he's so forlorn that he gets Sabrina the Teenage Witch to cast this spell to try to bring Hot Dog back. But of course, Hot Dog comes back as a zombie dog and it bites Jughead. And so Jughead turns into the zombie. And of course, this happens the night of the big Riverdale Halloween dance. So everybody's in costume at the school gym, and Jughead comes bursting through the door as a zombie, and they all think he's in costume, and dun-dun-dun, that's where the story takes off.
That's awesome.
And the thing that surprised me the most about this was not the fact that they would kill somebody or do zombies. It's the fact that this is solicited as an ongoing series. This is not a miniseries. They are planning on doing this until it doesn't sell copies anymore.
And there was a rumored movie that might be possibly off of this book. Because they've been talking about doing a live action Archie movie, and this was kind of one of the stories that they were going to, that may have been the runner up for it.
It really kind of depends. I mean, I could see this having much more interest than a regular Archie series, but then I think there'd be a lot of, you know, the hardcore Archie fans that would be upset if this is what got the nod for that. But I'd definitely be more willing to watch this than watch a regular Archie series or Archie TV show or movie or whatever.
Yeah, but the zombie fans will probably eat it up.
Oh, that's bad.
Well,
but yeah, I mean, it's.
I'm just like, oh god, I gotta hit the sim. I gotta hit the snare. I had to hit it.
But as zombie stories go, it's no worse than any other zombie story you've read. You know what I mean? So, at least it makes sense in the Archie universe, and it's actually I might say it's better than some of the other zombie comics I've read over the past few years.
And from what I've seen in a couple of panels, inside panels, it looks like the art looks like the cover.
Yeah, it is dark on the inside. It is. It's not drawn as a regular Archie comic. It definitely has a darker art style to it.
Okay. So that's it for Archie.
Oh, actually, I've got one other thing to mention about Archie real quick. And this is just, you know, 5 people in the world are going to care, but the new issue of Mega Man is out digitally, but it's not out in print. And it's supposed to be out in print, and somehow distribution has gotten messed up along the way. And if you go to Diamond's retailer website, the retailer website says that this week is the week for it to ship, but it hasn't shipped. It's not on the invoice for next week to ship. But if you go to Comixology, if you go to iVerse, if you go to Diamond Digital, any of those places, you can buy it digitally. It is available electronically to buy and download, but you cannot get a print copy. Print copy is not shipped. It's nowhere to be found. And I've emailed the contacts I have at Archie just to see what's up with the distribution and haven't gotten any answers yet. So I don't know what's going on with that, but kind of an interesting little thing happening there.
Okay. For those five people interested.
Yeah, like I said, five people in the world, but, you know. Hey. My son's one of them, so I got to follow up on it.
Cool. All
right.
Boom Studios had Three Guns, number 3 of 6, come out this week.
Which was good.
I still haven't read number 2, so I'm a little behind.
Yeah, I actually got caught up on this one this weekend. So the third issue came out, I was ready for it. And it's good. Like, if you've read the first series, Two Guns, I'd say this is just as good as the first series. If you saw the movie, this is the perfect follow-up to it. And it's, again, one of those stories where lots of twists, lots of turns. If you ever watched a show, Burn Notice, it does follow in that same type of vein. Every character is somehow trying to double-cross another character in one way or another. And the two guys, the two guns, as they were so named in the first series, were working undercover for different branches of the military. And so now in this series, they've gotten out, but they're trying to get their way back into their old jobs and whatever, and they get caught up in another double cross happening with a white supremacist and a Russian gun runner. And so you just have these kind of wacky action movie, type situations coming out of it. And if you love those, you know, buddy cop movies, if you saw the Two Guns movie, that type of stuff, this is the perfect follow-up.
So should I read the Two Guns before I read this?
You don't necessarily have to. I mean, the only thing that you have to know is that the two guys, they've run into each other before. And that's really all you have to know about them, is that they do have some sort of prior history. But I don't think, if you're not familiar with the story, I don't think it really makes a difference as far as this story goes, because they do kind of reference some of the stuff that happens and, move the story along their own way. So I think you could just start with Three Guns, number 1. You'd be okay.
Okay. Because I did read 1 and I did enjoy it. It just kind of fell behind on catching up with the second and third. So.
Well, and each issue brings a new major twist. So there's a twist at the end of 1 where you figure out who a character is. There's a twist at the end of 2 when you figure out someone's being betrayed. There's a twist at the end of number 3 where you find out someone's working for somebody that you didn't think there was a connection there, you know? So it's like every issue brings in some sort of cliffhanger twist at the end. So I really enjoy it, and it's one of those things, unlike, I think the first one was written more for the trade, where if you sit down at once and you read all, I think it was 6 issues of the first one in one sitting, it works out really well. Whereas I think this one is written more for the individual issues, where you get to the end of each issue and there's that cliffhanger that wants you to, you know, pulls you back in for next month.
Okay. So that's Three Guns, everyone. Boom also had the book that Agent 70's been enjoying, Hero Bear and the Kid.
Yes, I did not get a chance to read it this week, but I definitely recommend it to anyone who wants to pick up something new.
I did. Of course, this is one my son reads, so I've been reading it too, and I've really enjoyed it. And the little boy, I mean, long story short, little boy finds this bear. He touches the bear on the nose. The bear becomes this giant superhero. And so the kid gets to be the sidekick, you know, the partner, whatever. And they face their first supervillain, this giant robot. And they get to fight him this time around. And the kid doesn't really get to do anything, but he gets to be a hero by association. So he's getting some notoriety and he's having fun living in his, you know, fantasy land of being the hero and everything. And at the same time, there's this backup story where the butler in the mansion where the kid lives knows something about the history of the bear. And there's this guy who used to work for the kid's grandpa, and there's something going on there and you really don't understand what it is, but he's somehow tied into these monsters, this giant robot attacking and all this kind of stuff. So, for a book for kids, it, you know, brings in subplots and it brings in mystery and it brings in stuff like that to kind of bend kids' brains a little bit. But, it has a great artwork. And it works for all ages.
I agree. Just haven't read this issue, but I'm glad that you enjoyed it, Dirk.
I downloaded it before the show, so I'll get it to you.
Cool. Thank you.
There's also... Yeah, that's about worth mentioning. That's all Boom has. Deathmatch number 10, I guess, was the other book I was going to mention.
Is anybody reading the Sons of Anarchy? Does anybody watch the show or anything?
No.
No.
How about you?
No.
Oh, okay.
Next up will be Dark Horse, who I'm behind on. But let's see, what books do we want to point out this week?
I love the look of Shaolin Cowboy. I just did not have a chance to read it. That's Geoff Darrow doing the art.
I flipped through it. I mean, just to sort of see what it was about.
Yeah, I mean, he's got such a unique, you know, hyper-detailed art style. And, you know, he puts stuff out, you know, on the... He's not nearly as prolific as he should be because his style is so hyper-detailed. I thought it was a phenomenal-looking book. I just did not have a chance to really put my mind to reading it.
Yeah, it's one of those I want to read. I just haven't had time over the last 2 days, so I hope to get to it this weekend.
Same. Any other books? Star Wars number 10?
Yes, Star Wars, the other book I was going to mention.
Do you read it?
No, because I haven't read issue 9 yet. Anyone else read it?
Nope.
Am
I the only one reading this?
Yep.
I'm going to start at some point, but I just haven't.
Oh, and speaking of Star Wars, Dark Horse announced today a limited series by Matt Kent, which will take place in the original trilogy. Just thought I'd point that out since it popped up in my mind just now.
Excuse me for a second, fellas. Be right there. Right back.
All right. While Agent 70 leaves us, we'll...
I think we should mention the new Halo book came out.
The final issue of the limited series.
And this, we have a fair number of people who actually come into our store specifically looking for this book that have never come in buying comics before. So this is a good book to reach out to different readers. That the Marvel series, for whatever reason, when Marvel did it, nobody paid any attention. But now that Dark Horse is doing it, suddenly people are paying attention. And I don't understand that, except maybe that maybe it's people who...
Such a company.
Yeah, but the only thing I can think of is maybe because the Star Wars connection, maybe people were picking up the Star Wars book and told their buddy about how the Halo book was coming out from the people doing the Star Wars comics, so maybe that had something to do with it.
And I believe they're also doing Mass Effect books.
They are.
Yep.
So that could be the connection.
There was actually a whole article on Newsarama today about all the different video game franchises that Dark Horse is producing comics for. So go on their website and check that out because I don't remember all the games that were mentioned. DC had Astro City number 5, which I believe Agent 70 originally was kind of excited for, but I think he fell off it.
Haven't had time to read it. The premise is, you know, is still the same. The art is still just as good as it always has been. So I just have to give some time to reading it this week. Just didn't have the time to get to it.
Okay. The oversized Bat. Oh, actually, take that back. Batgirl 24. Actually, I could have skipped that because I don't think anyone's reading.
You know, actually, I started to read this, and then I realized that this was part 2 of a story, and I haven't read the part 1, so I have to go back and find the part 1.
That's Tim's usual story.
I was like, well, nobody's going to read this. I better read this for this week. And then I realized it was a part 2, so.
Got to start from, I mean, it's so close to the beginning, so you might as well start from the beginning.
Right.
I like the covers, though. I'm sure that's not how the inside looks. But yeah, because I remember the last issue, the cover was pretty nice too.
But that was 2 months ago, so.
Yeah. Who remembers all that? So now the overly sized Batman number 24, which I didn't even know was oversized until someone told me the price of it today. And I was like, what? But then it's like 50 something pages. So
and it was good. It was good. I mean, this was the birth of Batman, the origin of the Joker, basically. You don't actually get to see the Joker, but you get to see the Red Hood fall into the vat of acid.
So the Red Hood leader is the Joker.
Well, it's funny because the body falls into the vat of acid. The warehouse is on fire. It's going to explode, whatever. Everybody's got to get out of there. And so then, of course, when Batman goes back in, he doesn't find a body. But he finds information that makes him think he found the identity of who this guy was, the guy's real name. So it was kind of one of those moments where you're like, oh, my gosh, they're actually going to reveal who the Joker actually is. Well, then the name that he comes up with is a body that somebody found, like, in a dumpster on the other side of town that's been dead for days. So whoever the Joker was, he had actually killed somebody and assumed this other person's identity. So you thought that you were going to get this reveal of who the Joker really is, but then it was a swerve, and it's not him. And then they say, well, we didn't find a body, so maybe the entire body was eaten by the acid. Maybe the guy escaped. Maybe there's a point at the end right before he falls into the acid where he gets on a helicopter and tries to escape. And he says, maybe one of his other henchmen, he put the hood on him and put him on the helicopter, and that's the guy who fell in the acid. So it's like everything kind of falls into place exactly how you expect it. And then at the end, Batman's sitting there at his computer going, I have no idea what just happened, and I can't verify any of this stuff, and it's driving me crazy. So Joker's already playing mind games on Batman before he's even Joker, as this story is wrapping up.
I tried to read it.
I'm glad Roddy Cat got that one.
Nice.
I tried to read it before the show, but then I realized I wasn't going to make it all the way through, so I stopped. I will read it. I did see a nice side-by-side picture that someone had posted online of, it's like, because Bruce gets his head shaved and at the beginning of the book, which I did see that part.
Yeah.
And someone put a picture next to it of Ben Affleck.
Ooh.
And they look exactly the same.
Oh, like from the town?
Probably. But yeah.
That's funny. Like,
oh. There's a neat scene where he's grabbing one of the Red Hood gang off the roof, and it's the Detective Comics 27 shot where it's kind of like the yellow sky background and him swinging with the guy underneath his arm, kicking, and it recreated that comic cover on one of the panels that I thought was nice to see in there. Another throwback.
That's cool. Yeah. Gonna have to take a look at that.
Anyone reading Catwoman 23? Why is Catwoman on it? Just issue 23? Oh, that's a variant cover. Never mind. So why is it on number 23 and not 24 like everything else? Coffin Hill? I'm assuming this is some Vertigo book?
Yeah, I started reading it and I gave up on it. Like it starts out and you think it's some sort of murder mystery cop book, but then she gets shot, goes in the hospital, her personality changes. She has this horrible past and upbringing, and she decides to go back home to where her family has lived for generations. And I don't know, after that, I just kind of, she became very unlikable. And the more you found out about her past, the more unlikable she became. And it, whatever it was on the first, six pages or whatever was, I don't know if it was like a red herring or if it was just be there to, throw you this curveball when her personality changes after she gets shot. But I just gave up on it.
Moving on.
Tough look. Yes, moving on.
FBP?
Constantine number 7.
Oh, I skipped Constantine. Poor Constantine.
I'm trying to think. I didn't see this. Does this begin the forever evil blight, I wonder?
This is Ray Fox, the guy we were talking about from from Detective 27. Eternal. So. But no, I didn't read it.
Okay. I don't see a nice little header on it, so maybe it doesn't isn't part of the crossover yet.
Look forward to Eclectic using that cover.
Why?
Because, well, you know, E is his thing. He's always been mysterious. And
oh, and it says Mr. E.
Yes.
I can believe that.
Okay. Federal Bureau of Physics number 4.
Yep. So, if you are on Instagram and you look up the hashtag Comic Book Chronicles, you will see some of my little three sentence, I guess, reviews, impressions of books. This is one of them. So the story is still progressing. They were in a bubble verse. It just kind of kept people up. They were in a bubble verse and trying to get people out of there. There was two agents, Agent Hardy and Agent J. J's been compromised. And part of their way out has been taken from them. Because J has set up a bunch of... pretty much set it up to blow before it's time to, because usually a Bubbleverse has a time limit for which it will keep, and anything that is still in the Bubbleverse, when it pops, goes away. So Agent J got double-crossed, and things happen. Some people got out. I won't go too far into that. And now a mystery starts to unfold, or more questions start to get answered about what happened in there and with Agent J. So it's still a good read. The art is good. And
excellent.
So check it out if you like science.
Science.
If you like science.
Hey.
Science. That sounds cool.
Because they do. They do throw around a lot of science terms. I am not informed enough to know whether it's actual real science or not, but they throw a lot of terms. And it is, so I don't want to say it's X-Files-like because it's really not. But if the name is any implication, it is basically the FBI type situation going on where they, you know, investigate issues of science matters.
It's cool because it's only up to issue 4, so it really can't be, it won't be that hard to backtrack and catch up. So maybe I'll do my best to catch up on this. Just pick up the first Collider issue and then go to FBP.
Yeah, it's a pretty easy read. There have been spots of a lot of rhetoric, but if you don't find that, it's fine.
Did you ever watch Fringe? Is it like Fringe? Because it sounds somewhat similar.
I've seen a little bit of it, and I can see where that is comparison. I haven't seen enough of Fringe. I know it goes crazy later on. And, yeah, you can make a loose comparison to that. They don't go, like, here they don't go into, like, alternate timelines or anything. But you can draw some parallels, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oops. What happened?
Forever Evil Arkham War, number 1 of 6.
Anybody read this?
I did.
What do you think?
This is continuing the story from the Bane Villains Month special. And it's just, you know, all of Gotham has been carved up into these little sections with different, you know, Batman villains taking control of these different areas. And Bane wants the whole thing for himself. So it's villains versus villains. Bane is building an army of villains to take on these different villain factions. So you kind of have this idea of like a divided kingdom, and he's the conqueror coming in, you know, kind of like an Alexander the Great or a Genghis Khan or somebody like that, who's just going to destroy everybody else and take it all for himself. And it's actually, it's interesting. It's pretty good.
Nice. I'll be reading it sometime.
Yeah. Got to read that.
Green Lantern Corps number 24. Which is, I'm assuming, part 2 of Lights Out.
Yep.
Still got
to read this. Dirt, well, I'm going to be we're leaning on you for a lot of these DC books, man. Take the lead.
I did read this, the continuing story of Relic, who he comes from basically the universe that grew before our universe. Basically, as the story goes, in the universe before ours, there were people who tapped into these energy sources, just like the Green Lanterns, the Yellow Lanterns, the Orange Lanterns, whatever. They tapped into these sources, and they were using the energy to create their cities and construct their vehicles and all that kind of stuff. And what they learned was that the energy is finite. It's not infinite. And as they use up the energy, it caused the universe to collapse. And Relic was the one guy who knew that this was coming. He was kind of like the Jor-El of this universe. And he tried to stop this collapse from happening. And instead, he became the only holdover from the old universe into the new universe. So this entire time, he's been trying to rebuild himself, rebuild his machines, and find a way to collect this energy to store it and save it. And he sees all of these lanterns as basically people who are trying to destroy the universe. And whether they know it or not, they are killing the universe, and he's going to stop them by collecting this energy and destroying their ability to use it. And so his first attack is against the Green Lantern Corps on OA, or OA, or however you pronounce that, and he destroys the central battery, and the central battery is tied into the core of the planet, so he causes the planet to explode. And so basically this issue is the core trying to evacuate, trying to save as many lives as possible, trying to figure out how to get away, and trying to figure out what their next step could possibly be. But, I mean, make a long story short, they fail in saving the planet explodes, and they have to figure out what their next step is. And so it's...
You said OA blew up?
Yeah. Yeah, it's destroyed.
That's been done in the past before, right?
I don't know if the planet's blown up before. I mean, they've killed the Guardians and replaced them with new Guardians. But I don't know if the planet itself... They destroyed the central battery before, but the battery was rebuilt. Yeah. But this... He didn't just destroy the battery. He sucked all the energy out of it. So the, like, 12% power that's still in Hal Jordan's ring is all the power he has, and apparently all the power he's going to get of the green energy, unless they can find a way to stop Relic and get it back. So it's one of those things where it's kind of redefining the mythos, but not retconning it, really. Like, they're not changing anything so much as just kind of adding to it and building upon what you already knew.
Cool.
Next up is Nightwing 24.
Anybody?
No, I haven't had a chance.
I'm reading it, just haven't had a chance. Suicide Squad number 24, I do want to read.
I did read.
Because Charles Soule wrote this one, right?
No, this is Matt Kent.
Oh, Matt Kent. Is he taking over? Usually it's one or the other is always taking over a book.
This is a Forever Evil tie-in, as it says across the top. Basically, with the breakdown of Belrive Prison, all of the villains, instead of trying to escape, they're trying to take over and get to Amanda Waller and get to her connections and, you know, find all of her goodies and her hidden stuff in the prison. And so she's, while she's in there, she's trying to make contact with the Suicide Squad, put together as much of the team as she can, and basically sends them out to get the OMAC. If you remember that series from the New 52 OMAC that lasted, 13 issues before it got canceled. She wants to find the OMAC and bring the OMAC in as her weapon. And at the same time, you've got another group of people. You've got like Steel and Power Girl, and they're being contacted by Amanda Waller. And Amanda Waller's trying to stop the first team. Like, she's basically sending in two teams to get it done, and basically putting one team against the other in the hopes that the two teams fighting are going to get the OMAC and bring it back. Or at least that's what it seems, but then you find out at the end of the issue there's a twist, another dun-dun-dun moment, and sets up, you know, the storyline to continue in the next one. But as far as the Forever Evil tie-in, it's only a tie-in in the sense that it's happening at the same time as the Forever Evil story, where some of these other books are kind of taking place, you know, either before Forever Evil happened or apparently Forever Evil is over. I don't know, but a lot of characters aren't really making mention of Forever Evil or they're doing their own thing. But this one is happening at the same time, so you kind of can see some of the other things happening in the DC universe while that's going on.
Cool.
All right.
Next up, the debut of Superman Wonder Woman number one. Unless someone read Superboy. Nope. Okay.
No one read Superboy? Okay.
Superman Wonder Woman number one, which I did read before the show because I stopped. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to get through this 50-something page Batman book. Let me read something DC. I guess I could talk about this one. It's, of course, revolving around the romantic relationship of Superman and Wonder Woman. They parade around together in their suits.
Yeah, this is written by Charles Soule.
And Tony Daniel on art. Art was great because it's Tony Daniel. We saw them in their suits and saw them out of their suits.
In their birthday suits?
Their clothes. And I guess because I'm not familiar with... Well, I'm familiar, but I'm not that into the DC universe like I am Marvel, so it was good of Soul to sort of point out the differences between the two characters. You know, Superman is always having to hide things, like hide who he is, hide his relationships. And Wonder Woman, as she said in the book, you know, the Amazons, they celebrate their heritage and who they are. So she sort of wants Clark to do the same. So there's kind of that back and forth between them with that. And a villain from the Villains Month appears also to, I guess, be the antagonist for this opening arc.
That was really my one criticism, was the villain that they chose to tie into this. Because it really felt out of place. And maybe the fact that that villain is out of place is part of the story. But that just seemed kind of unnecessary.
Out of left field.
Yeah. But I mean, as far as I thought the dialogue was great. I thought the characterization was great. The idea of how they kind of struggle with having real lives, you know, that was kind of interesting to see how they try to manage their relationship while at the same time they are superheroes. They are the, you know, technically the strongest people on the planet, you know. And the idea that they have these different philosophies on how to be a hero and why they would have a secret identity and all that kind of stuff was, it's nice to see some of that stuff get explored in a mainstream superhero book. You know, you see that a lot of times in the indie books, but you don't really see that a lot of times in the big headliner books. So it was nice to see some of that stuff put together. So overall, I enjoyed it. I thought it was great. It's just that choice of villain who appears at the end just kind of was kind of like a WTF moment.
Okay. Should at least open up some interesting fight sequences in the next issue.
Yeah.
That should do it for DC. Unless someone read Trinity of Sin, The Phantom Stranger, or World's Finest, number 16.
I actually did read Phantom Stranger.
Oh, what do you got on Phantom Stranger?
I'm trying to find the cover for it right now. I can't find it. I mean, it follows up on what's been happening in that book. Basically, you know, the Phantom Stranger in the DC universe is Judas from the Bible. And he's basically been paying for his sins ever since. And he's forced to kind of wander the earth and, you know, make amends for what he's done. And recently in the book, he had built a family. He had built this life for himself in the modern era. He tried to become somewhat human again, and a character called the Sin Eater came and killed his family, ripped that away from him. And he tried to go into the afterlife and find his family and bring them back. And he basically got kicked out, was told that he had no right to be there. And then in Trinity War, when Superman is taken over and his heat vision fires and kills Dr. Light, he actually risks taking Batman and Katana and Dead Man into the afterlife to try to find Dr. Light to get to the bottom of this mystery. And because he broke the rule, you know, trying to go into the afterlife to talk to people, which he's not supposed to do, but he did it for the good reason of trying to figure out what happened to Superman, try to clear Superman's name in this murder and everything, that he's kind of put in almost like this limbo of whether or not he's going to be punished or whether or not he's going to be forgiven and all of that. So there's a lot of that supernatural type stuff tying into it. But also the question, who they haven't revealed who it is in the New 52, the question is a villain in the New 52. And he apparently is somehow tied into this whole storyline of Phantom Stranger's family getting killed. And he has some sort of grudge against Phantom Stranger that goes back for eons. So they're kind of building up some sort of big confrontation happening with Phantom Stranger in question coming down the road.
Oh. I guess that's why the question doesn't have his own ongoing series like the other two.
Yeah, because he is a bad guy.
I didn't know that.
But it was a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be. I can say that much.
Okay. Any Dynamite books anyone wants to mention? Going once, going twice.
Nope.
Gone.
No.
Okay. Moving along. It's the IDW Publishing. They had a book that people will seem to be talking about today or this week. Triple Helix, number 1 of 4.
I didn't have a chance to read it. I did want to look at it, though.
Yeah, this is on my pile to read in the next couple days because this is technically a follow-up to his book Trio, which came out last year. Or maybe it was earlier this year. I don't know. This year's been pretty long. But Trio was the his version of the Fantastic Four, but he did them as 3 instead of 4. And that was only 4 issues, and it kind of left with this villain who had emerged. And then Triple Helix is this other superhero team in the same universe, and they run across this villain. So it's kind of picking up the villain's story from Trio into Triple Helix. So I plan on reading this and following up that story. I just haven't had a chance.
Okay. See if there's anything else worth mentioning.
Ghostbusters came out.
Nope.
And this has been pretty good also. I never really read this series before, but since it relaunched, I've been trying to keep up with it. And Winston gets a free trip to Las Vegas in order to take out a ghost at this hotel. So he declines to tell his girlfriend that he's going there on business. So he goes and tries to sneak away to do that. And she, of course, figures it out, but she forgives him because it's a free Vegas trip. And then there's this ghost ship, and Peter and Ray go to check it out, and they take Kylie, who is the character from Extreme Ghostbusters that's carried over into this series. They take her along, and this story kind of tries to justify having that character and try to make a point for her being part of the team, because a lot of people just see her as being the, you know, cartoon tie-in character, and they don't like it because she's not one of the original 4, you know. So this book does a pretty good job of making the point that she deserves to be there, and she's a good member of the team.
They still have those other 3? Because I know the beginning arc of this, I haven't read it, but the beginning arc was basically they got a new team, including her.
Right. Well, Janine has a new boyfriend. She doesn't want to be part of the Ghostbusters team, but she still works for the company, you know. Vickman's girlfriend, who was the FBI agent, has gone back to her regular job, but they show scenes of her kind of longing for the action that she saw as a Ghostbuster, so you get the idea that she wants to come back. And then the other guy, who was part of a rival team called the Ghost Smashers, he's still there and he's still employed, but nobody trusts him and nobody likes him, so they never want to take him on any missions or use him. So he keeps trying to force himself into some of these situations. So they're all still kind of there in one way or another, but Kylie is the only one who's really a character that people, you know, she's trusted by the team and they use her a lot.
Okay.
I guess that's it. Some Transformers books came out.
G.I. Joe Special Missions, but eh.
Yeah.
I'm so behind on those. I want to read
those. So am I. Yeah.
And then Transformers is another one I've been trying to read, but I'm so far behind on it.
I forget which one I tried reading a couple weeks ago, but I don't know. I just couldn't get through it. I like the cartoons, but...
Yeah, well, and part of it's because they have two different books that are going on at the same time. I get really confused between the books because they're all big, giant robots. And a lot of them, like, I only know the original Transformers from back in the day. So they bring in some of these other characters, and I have no idea who they are. And so I'm going from one book to the other, and I have to really kind of think about – a lot of times I have to flip through the issue that came before in order to remember what's going on when I read the new issue.
Image Comics. 237, which I need to read because I read 36, and I read at least part of the first trade. So I'm trying to get caught up with you.
What's up with you?
Oh, Ghosted number 4 came out too. Got to read that.
Nobody read America's Got Powers?
No.
Well, I see that it ended, that this is the last issue, so maybe a trade is in the works for me to take a look at.
You know, I tried reading it when it first came out, and I just couldn't get into it.
Yeah, I read, let's see, what issue is this? I read... Let's see, 7. I might have read like 5 or 4. Or not read. I kind of tried to read it and didn't finish it. But because I was like, oh, Brian Hitch book. But I'm not a big crazy Brian Hitch fan like everyone else is either, though. So
it might read better as a trade, so we'll see. It's only 7 issues.
You read it, Roddy Cat?
Nope. I keep hearing about it and kind of curious about it, but no, I haven't. Like, I'll probably do the trade thing, too.
Okay. Rocket Girl number 1 debuted. I did read this, and actually I still need to review it.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I guess that's probably half the reason why I haven't reviewed it yet. I haven't figured out what my take on it is going to be. I mean, it was good. There's nothing like... Nothing.
There's nothing overtly bad about
it. Yeah, not bad. I mean, it wasn't bad. It's colorful and art's nice, and that the story makes sense.
Seems interesting.
I guess all the stuff I'm saying now is stuff I can say in the review. But I mean, it makes sense. There's a teenage cop from the future comes back to the past to stop this company from trying to change stuff in the future.
Now, if she only had a laser tag gun.
And the Rocket Girl is a name she's given. And it takes place in 1986 New York, I think, or something like that. 1980-something New York.
Oh, really? Oh, no. So many memories.
It's not current day New York. It's 1980-something.
So basically what I said could have worked.
Exactly.
Yeah, laser tag. Absolutely.
And it's going to be an ongoing series, apparently. I read a bunch of interviews with Amy Reeder, the writer.
Oh, really? I thought it was a miniseries.
I did, too. She said it's going to be ongoing. So
that's cool.
Of course,
good for her.
As William B. West would say, in the land of image, that remains to be seen. Because he makes it seem like books can just fall off the face of the earth with them.
Well, Image also has this thing where they say it's an ongoing series, and then after 5 issues, you see, like, issue 6 will come out and say, number 6 of 10. Or... they'll have a 6-issue limited series, and then after issue 5, it doesn't say limited series anymore, and it just kind of keeps going on and on and on. So,
yeah. So yeah, take it as it goes. Put it that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I liked it. So check it out if you're interested. Sidekick number 3. Haven't got to that yet. I've enjoyed the first 2 issues so far. For what that's worth. Who's the writer on this? Does it say on the cover?
Straczynski?
If I say JMS.
Yeah.
Did I talk about how I read Lazarus number 1 finally over the weekend?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, I did that. And I liked it.
I grabbed number 1 and number 2 this last week, but I haven't had a chance to read them yet.
I've had issue one on my iPad for the longest now, because what, issue three and four, I think, or four, three or four.
I think four is the last one that just came out.
Yeah. And I've had it on there. Like, I've read like maybe 5 pages from it, then stopped, read like 5 more. And I was at my brother Adam Black's house this weekend. I was like, let me just finish this. And I liked the little, he had this long, I guess you call it editorial, this basically talking about the origin of the book at the end, that I kind of like explaining how he got to it. So anyway, I just wanted to mention that real quick. There's another new number one book called Three, which I probably won't read, but did anyone check that out?
I was going to flip through it on Wednesday, but I can tell you this was the first book that sold out in our store.
Wow.
I mean, we also sell it online, and a bunch of copies sold online, but it was – our store opened at 10:30, and between the people who had ordered it in advance and the online sales, because we actually put them on sale on Tuesday night online, because we actually have the books in, this book was sold out before our doors even opened.
That's kind of cool.
That's impressive.
It's interesting seeing what books people gravitate to like that.
And this is one of those, like, I paid absolutely zero attention to it before it came out. But when I was doing the inventorying the books on Tuesday, I thought, oh, maybe I'll flip through this and read this. This looks kind of interesting. And it was sold out, gone right away.
Yeah, because I remember I've kind of been trying to keep up with the Image news as far as, like, new number ones coming out. I don't remember reading any news articles or interviews or anything on this. What is this about? I see it looks like.
It's set in Sparta.
Yeah, it's a Sparta type looking cover.
But I mean, beyond that, I have no idea.
Kieran Gillen is the writer, so I probably won't like it. Going off of his Thor, at least. Not Thor, but Iron Man.
Iron Man. Jason Aaron is doing a kick-ass Thor.
Yeah, I did read that too before the show. Kieran Gillen, is that the only Marvel book he's doing? He's not doing, he's also doing Young Avengers, right?
Which is kinda, I think so.
Yes.
It started slow, but it's kind of been better now. I don't know. His writing.
All right.
There's a whole bunch of Walking Dead stuff on here, I see.
Well, it's all those covers.
Oh, just Walking Dead 15, I guess, is the regular issue.
Well, there was the 115, there was the 10th anniversary special of number one, and then there was the Tyrese special.
Yeah, I thought so. I downloaded like 3 or 4 books of theirs.
Because this is the 10th anniversary of Walking Dead. Oh, yeah, I love Walking Dead. This is one of the first. Image has gotten so bad with their review copies of stuff. You know, they throw them up. They used to throw them up like Friday afternoon, and then it became Saturday, and then it became Sunday, and now it's like Tuesday night.
Nice.
They finally remember to throw them up there.
I think I was sitting here Tuesday night, like around after I got home, like 7 or 8. It's like, let me check FileZilla one more time. And I'm like, there it is.
Yeah, they've gotten really bad about it. But Walking Dead is one of the first books that I'll read when I crack open, do the inventory on it. And this is, you know, something they've been building up to for a long time. They've been building up to this ever since probably like issue 90, you know, something like that. They've been building up to this confrontation. And basically the idea is, you know, if you're familiar with Walking Dead at all, of course, it's the zombie apocalypse world. These different groups have kind of built their own little communities, and the communities started to kind of work together. And as this main group that we've been following, Rick Grimes and his group, as they've interacted with these communities, they found out that there's this guy, Negan, who is basically making himself the overlord of the territories. He demands a tribute. He sends his thugs in to, you know, kill people if they don't pay up what they're supposed to. And Rick decides to make a stand, and he unites these other communities together with the idea of going and attacking Negan and basically calling him out and just basically saying, we think we have more people than you. We've got more weapons than you. So you need to work with us or we're going to war. And Negan makes it clear that he does not want to negotiate or compromise in any way. And so Walking Dead is going to go, I think it's biweekly, except for December because of the holidays. But it's going to go biweekly from now through February, I think, as they work out the storyline. So this is
big deal.
I see it says chapter 1 of 12, so that's probably why they're going bi-weekly. Get that story out quick. Because I say, well, it's a long story arc.
But they're also doing it, you know, the new season of the show is starting on Sunday. So they're getting this out right in time for the new season of the show. And one thing that we've always noticed in our store is that sales will slump in the summer when the show's not on. And as soon as the show starts in October, everybody starts buying the comics again. So makes perfect sense.
Okay. So that's it for Image. Marvel. It wasn't exactly a big week for them, which is always welcome. Helps me get caught up quicker. We had the last issue of, well, last slash final issue of Astonishing X-Men number 68.
Until they relaunch it.
Exactly. I read this. It was a pretty quiet issue, like really kind of reflective. It focused on Warbird and her experiences, and also encompassed the rest of this Astonishing team. Because there's a bunch of X characters here that are kind of not in the spotlight that much, and it's nice that they have a place to be seen and to grow and expand. So I'm sad to see this go. I couldn't believe when I saw the cover that this particular title has been around since 2004. In different versions. But
was this the one that originally launched with Joss Whedon?
Yes.
Right.
And they brought back Colossus and did the whole thing. Yeah.
Correct.
The one I said I'm gonna go back and read one day and have.
You never read that?
Yeah, I downloaded all the issues to my iPad and then I just never read them.
Okay.
One day I'll see what all this hype was about.
Uh-huh.
Being the X-Men fan I am. So are we, what are our percentage of thinking that this will be relaunched in Marvel Now?
Well, Marvel Now, Part 2. It'll be relaunched.
I think it might come later, but it will come. I was thinking it was going to turn into that other book that Nightcrawler's coming.
Yeah, I did too. But I did see, if you look at the little Marvel schedule of panels for the week, during their Amazing X-Men and Friends panel, Marjorie Liu is listed as being one of the special guests on the panel. So more than likely, she's got something X-Men related still going on with Marvel. At least that would be my assumption.
Yeah, or she could be talking about the stuff that she had already done with them, I guess, or up to now. At least about the book.
Well, New York Comic Con, they've said they're going to reveal a bunch of the new series coming out, so I'm sure that she's got some new X-Men series and,
It's funny because her name's actually not even attached to any of the teasers, but doesn't mean there aren't stuff they didn't tease. That's
right. Right.
Let's see. Avengers AI number 4. I haven't read it.
Nope.
This was all right. It's still the Demetrius thing. Vision realizes he got played finally. They go into where they think he and the rest of the AI are set up. And some action happens. Victor's kind of hesitant about his role on the team. That kind of stuff. But it's a pretty quick read. And Alexis finally gets some combat, I guess. So she's actually kind of takes over some stuff. But it's a pretty good read.
Avengers Arena number 16. Haven't got to that yet either.
I read it. It was pretty interesting. The storyline is basically hurtling towards its conclusion. So if you want to see, how this story is getting ready to wrap up, this is definitely a book you need to read.
Does it feel like they're rushing towards the end, or does it feel like this is the natural speed of it?
No, not definitely natural speed, because it's been, listen, in my opinion, there's only so many ways you can tell these stories of, we're stuck on an island trying to kill each other. There's only so many interactions that you can do, only so many permutations of like these kind of battles. So it actually does seem like a natural ending point for the series. Well, for the story, at least.
It seems like there was always, it doesn't seem like it's getting canceled as much as it had a finite story to tell, and then they're going to tell it, then they're going to spin something else out of it.
Right.
At least that's what I've gotten from it.
Right. That's, I agree with that. That's a, you know, I think that's pretty much spot on.
Captain America number 12.
I had mixed feelings about this issue. I don't know if anyone else read it.
No,
not yet.
No.
So I'm a Cap fan, and this was actually a really tough book for me to read. Spoiler alert. Cap gets all emo in this issue, and I really, I kind of had some real problems with Remender about this. You know, PTSD. I know that Cap was, yeah, it's PTSD, right? Post-traumatic.
Yes,
your PTSD. Whatever.
Yeah, post-traumatic stress disorder. So, you know, I know Cap was in Dimension Z for longer than he's been awake in, you know, modern Marvel times. You know, technically, I read somewhere that technically, according to Marvel's timeline right now, Cap was thawed out of the ice after 9/11, which is crazy to me.
Yeah, but, I heard they were going to switch the timeline around a little.
Yeah, like he's got to be awake since like the early 90s or the mid 90s or something like that. It's impossible. That's crazy. But, you know, Cap gets all emo and I'm, you know, I'm just like, I want to reach into the panel and shake him. Like, what's wrong with you? But, you know, this happens with Cap. You know, it's a cyclical thing. He has like kind of a crisis, you know, separate crises of faith, you know, and he has to kind of reestablish his base before he can, you know, rise up and move on. But it's kind of funny because my favorite book of the week, my click of the week, which we'll get to, Cap is like, you know, standing strong. So it's kind of weird to see like the, you know, the two different ways of his, you know, the two different portrayals. It looks like the dichotomy of the character.
That also kind of goes back to editorial and whether or not there's an editorial control that's putting the story together.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, keeping the characters in line with each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, I had some real problems with this issue. I'm still willing to stick with it, but even the art on this issue wasn't as consistent as as I've been used to from Pacheco. So, I think he had a couple of rushed pages, and I think, you know, Klaus Janson, who is not the tightest inker in the world, you know, from what I know of his work on other artists, he's not the tightest inker. He doesn't really embellish. And make, you know, and like kind of close up lines that probably should be closed. So, you know, it doesn't help this issue. I was kind of disappointed. You could really tell the pages that Pacheco had like kind of completed and the ones that he was just kind of rushing to put together. And that's really disappointing because if you've ever read Avengers Forever, the Kurt Busiek and Pacheco limited series, that was pretty good. And, you know, there's a couple pages in this that are reflective of his real skill, but there's a couple of pages that are just kind of too loose for my taste.
Okay. Deadpool number 18.
Anybody read this? I read a lot of Marvel this week because, you know, that's pretty much all I was awake for.
Good. I haven't read it. Actually, I stopped reading Deadpool. Never mind.
Right, so this is, I guess, the penultimate issue of the good, the bad, and the ugly storyline. Basically, someone from the Weapon Plus program has basically been drugging Deadpool and stealing his organs because he's got a healing factor. And, you know, in order for him to have his mutant power, his mutant healing factor activated, he was basically cured of cancer. So, you know, this one scientist is trying to, you know, use that and experiment with, you know, pieces of Deadpool. So basically, what's revealed in this arc is that someone has been drugging him and, you know, like at inopportune times and stealing body parts and basically transplanting them onto people as part of human experiments to see, you know, to see if he can give them powers by splicing it together with other mutant genes. And it's kind of funky. There's a couple of cool scenes in this book. I really suggest that if you're interested in this, you read the first issue of the arc because this is probably not the most reader-friendly jump on point.
Okay. Fearless Defenders number 10, which I did read.
Go ahead. I didn't have a chance to read it. Anybody else?
It's an Infinity.
Yep. I read it.
And they introduced a new character called Rin, who, spoiler,
she's got jazz hands.
Yes, and she's an inhuman that gets activated from the Terrigen Mist that gets released across the world in Infinity number, three.
Tim, did you get a Dazzler Jubilee vibe from this character?
No, but I guess I can see it.
Yeah.
She's Asian.
Well, outside of that, but I mean, you know,
wait, she's Asian?
Yeah.
All right. That's awesome. We got one more, baby.
She's Asian. She's a dancer. Her powers are indicative of, say, or whichever power she picks up is indicative of. Not totally Jubilee-esque, but hey, yes.
Something Jubilee Dazzler related.
Yeah.
Performer.
Yes.
In the G-rated sense of performer.
Oh God, you had to even mention that to him.
In case you were wondering.
That's funny.
And possible interest for Annabelle.
Oh, she rolls that way.
Yeah,
she does.
Gotcha.
After I read it, I was like, yep, the Tumblr internet crowd will fall in love with this character. Just like they did Annabelle. That's what they do. Actually, I don't have no problem with Annabelle.
Yeah, Annabelle's actually a cool character.
Yeah, I like her. She's cool. Infinity number 4 or 6.
Yes, let's get it.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff happening in this
game. I actually haven't read it.
Oh, no.
But go ahead and spoil it. You're not going to ruin anything.
That's nothing to spoil because nothing really happens in it.
A lot of stuff happened in this issue.
The cover kind of tells you.
It's more political stuff. I mean, there's no action in it.
What?
Like, no, yes, there is, man.
I mean, it's like one sequence of a couple pages.
But it's the sequence. But it is the sequence.
I mean, it's a badass sequence. Once I read it, after I read it earlier last week, I tweeted out, I was like, this scene between the Builder and Thor, oh my God. Oh my God. But yeah,
but you kind of figured, you know, the way that the episode was kind of come out, well, the way that it was starting out, even building up to the fact that Thor's involvement into it, you know, you're just like, okay, what are they really doing? Until you start instill that happens, or until you see Thor kind of happens, and then you kind of figure out, okay, well, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, but let's start from the beginning of the issue. I mean, there's a couple of developments going on. There's planning going on.
Mm-hmm.
If you recall, at the end of issue number 3, Cap says it's time to surrender. And I'm like, what? But now we know that it was part of a bigger plan. There's actually a throwdown between, this is probably shown somewhere else, but you know, it's done really well here. Like after the Terrigen bomb has been set off, between Black Bolt and Thanos.
Yeah,
that, I forgot about that. Okay,
yeah, I thought that was pretty well done.
Yeah,
after the Thor stuff, I was just blown. that was the biggest thing in the book to me.
Yeah. I mean, it was you know, what was cool about this and why I enjoyed this, and this is definitely my click of the week, is that, you know, you got to see Thanos, you know, in serious hand-to-hand with someone who's got, like, literal, like, world or earth-shattering powers, and, like, you get to see Black Bolt, you know, really let loose against someone who can take, you know, the full force of his voice. You know, that was pretty cool. And we also get the development of Thane, the son of Thanos. You know, we see how he, you know, kind of becomes who he is going to be. And, you know, and like you said, you know, that scene that you were talking about, that pivotal scene involving the Builder and Thor, which is done ridiculously well. Like, indeed. I was so impressed by Jerome Pena's layout and his pencils. It was just so well done. And the writing, you know, how you're always you know, disenchanted by Hickman's mumbo jumbo. There was some great dramatic writing in this. I was like, hell yeah.
You were like, how?
I agree.
Hell yeah. That's all I could do. You know, like, I was, you know, it was stirring.
And in a way, this kind of harkens back to if you ever read Avengers books, and there's always the arcs where either the team gets separated or the mansion gets taken over or something like that, and then they start to come back and regroup.
Right.
This kind of reminds me of that.
Oh, definitely, definitely. So, I mean, there's some great, you know, like I said, there's some great lines, and, you know, even the lines that, you know, it's kind of cool that Thor gets to have the pep rally speech on yes. Hala. That's kind of cool. It's not Cap, it's actually Thor, and that's pretty cool.
Dorkika says, wasn't the Terrigen bomb already used in War of Kings? Not sure.
Have no idea.
I read that. I don't. I seem to recall something about that, but I don't know if it was worldwide. I'm not. I can't say for sure, Dorkikas. But I mean, I have to go digging into the long boxes for that one.
Yep. Okay. I guess that's all Infinity talk, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I guess so.
Superior Spider-Man team up number 4, which I need to read. That's an Infinity tie-in.
I read it, but I'm kind of not. I don't know. I didn't read the last book, so I'm guessing it's fallen from there.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it's a direct continuation.
Yeah.
So I like the artist on it.
Yeah, the art had a nice animation feel to it, look to it. But basically, in the last issue, there was this girl who. She longed for the old days of, you know, knights and princes and a quieter world and not all the distractions of the internet and cell phones and all that kind of stuff. And when the aliens come and invade Earth because, you know, the Avengers are gone, so now's the time to invade Earth, she gets struck by – I forget exactly how, but she gets struck by some sort of energy blast that turns her into electricity. And so she happens to communicate with Spider-Man, and he basically tries to, you know, explain to her, well, this is how you can use your powers. This is how you can travel on power lines. This is how you can, you know, do all this and that, whatever. And she does, and she repels the alien invasion, but then she realizes this is her opportunity to also, because she's electronic, cut out the power and destroy the cell phone towers and, you know, break all the networks and everything like that. And so she starts turning New York back into the Dark Ages. And, of course, while this is happening, here comes wave 2 of the alien invasion. So now Spider-Man's got to figure out how does he convince this girl, first of all, stop her from, you know, destroying the city and you know, removing all the infrastructure. But also, how does he convince her that she's wrong and that she needs to stop this and that things weren't so great back in those days? And she's got this, you know, romanticized notion of how things were. And so he digs out the helmet that he actually used when he excised Peter Parker out of his mind and uses that to connect with her and bring her consciousness into his subconscious and make this connection with her and try to communicate with her. So it gets really kind of weird and out there for a while, but it was a lot of fun, especially if you were, you know, following from the previous issue.
Nice explanation.
Okay.
Thor, God of Thunder, number 14. We get the assembling of the League of Realms.
What, you mean the Fellowship of the Ring Realms? Anybody here read this?
I read it.
No.
So obviously this is a riff on the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah. So Malekith, to stop Malekith, the accursed, whatever.
He's accursed.
Instead of Thor just leading the Warriors Three and what's her name?
Sif
to stop Malekith, since he's sort of rampaging across the nine realms, they think that all the different realms should be represented in a group. And so that we have like a dwarf, an elf, a giant, whoever else, a dark elf.
And a light elf.
Yeah, dark and light elf. And of course, And of course, they're called the League of Realms. And of course, they go to the first place and they fight Malekith, but he escapes and they argue. And of course, the whole team is running well in the beginning, but we have to work together to stop him. Stuff you've seen before.
It's the Fellowship of the League of Realms.
But Ron Garney's art is nice. The colors by whoever did the colors are nice. I like the stark blue of the Dark Elves. Mm-hmm.
Listen, the color work on Thor ever since Garney started on art, whoever's been doing the color, it's Ives Vorchina, as the color artist, is doing a phenomenal job on this book. That is definitely one of the highlights of reading this, is definitely the colors, because I've said it before, Ron Garney's art can be very sketchy, and since there's no inker credited here, you have to assume that Ives Vorchina is doing, you know, the job of an inker and a colorist, and that's why they're calling him the color artist. So, you know, the result is phenomenal. It's actually very pleasing to the eye, and doesn't skimp on any details. It's just really well done.
Now, a book that Dirt should still be reading, Ultimate Comics X-Men number 32.
Yes. Probably the only one, I'm assuming.
Yep.
Yep.
Well, Kitty Pryde is stepping up her war against Jean Grey. Kitty Pryde has been leader of the mutant faction on Earth called Utopia. And Jean Grey in Tyon, I think is how you pronounce it, she has her own mutant colony. And Jean Grey has been trying to take over Utopia because she wants everyone to be under her leadership, whatever. And Kitty Pryde comes to the realization that, in a way, Jean Grey is right. All of the mutants do need to be on the same team, just not under Jean Grey. So she realizes that she does need to go to war, but she needs to go to war to destroy Jean Grey. And she realizes that she's going to go to war and there's going to be death. And it's going to be difficult. And this is the, like, grown-up decision that she has to make for the betterment of mutant kind. So for the longest time, Jean Grey has been doing these things to try to sabotage Kitty Pryde, to make Kitty Pryde look like she wanted war, like she was evil, like she was trying to get this war started between them. And now Kitty Pryde is just basically stepping up and saying, I have to do this. It is time for this. And one of the things that Jean Grey does is she kidnaps Wolverine, who in the alternate universe is the son of Logan, and basically turns him feral and sets him loose in her own city, with the idea being it looks like it's an attack from Kitty Pryde. And she's trying to, you know, basically get all of her people together against Kitty Pryde because Wolverine's doing this attack. And Kitty Pryde is going in trying to save him, but it looks like he's so far gone, he can't be saved. And it looks like he's actually not going to survive this attack. And she's realizing that she may have to let him die in order for him to be kind of a martyr to the cause. So she's really starting, the character is really starting to grow into this role of, I have to make these hard decisions, and it's not, you know, building a utopia is not, you know, peace, love, and happiness and everything else. Sometimes you do have to get your hands dirty, and there does have to be blood, and it's just kind of a neat take on some of the characters and the way that they act and interact with the world around them.
Ultimate Universe and the things going on in there. We have to stay tuned for that.
Yeah, because Cataclysm is coming soon.
Yep. Perfect. Uncanny X-Force number 12, which I did.
Anybody? What'd you think? Because I couldn't force myself to read this.
The only reason I was tired,
you know, towards the end of the list, I was like,
the only reason I rushed to read it was because I was reading Newsarama and I saw there was like a spoiler article up about something that happened, and I was like, oh, let me go read it before I actually read this article. So, X-Men villain.
Spoiler.
I won't spoil it, but the X-Men villain from the past is revealed to be the true villain behind the Revenants. And basically this spiral sort of solo issue.
Really?
And the artist is the one that did the book when they did the whole Betsy and
well, it's Adrian Alfona from the Runaways, right? Who did Runaways?
Is that what he did?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's good. Adrian Alfona is pretty good. So, you know, I'll take a look at it. I'm just not, you know, I've been so turned off by this version of Uncanny X-Force that, you know, it's a chore to read. But I'll give it a shot.
I have two, except now that they've revealed who this villain is, even though it's a villain I don't really care about because it was during the period of X-Men when I stopped collecting books. But at least now that we see who the villain is, and it seems like it's getting somewhere now. So
okay.
That's what I'd say about it.
All right.
Wolverine number 10.
I actually read this. This was an interesting read because, you know, I know that a lot of people are kind of turned off by, you know, this killable storyline where, you know, Wolverine loses his healing factor due to an alien virus. You know, talk about Deus Ex Machina, right? So, you know, the story is actually kind of a buddy cop type or buddy traveling story with Kitty Pryde and Wolverine. And it's actually, you know, it's maybe it struck a chord, you know, with me because it's kind of reminiscent of a lot of the old, like the 80s stories with Kitty Pryde and Wolverine, except they're just both a little older now. You know, there's a parallel story going on with this virus lady. I forget her name, but, you know, they're trying to use her to get rid of that alien virus that's like slowly spreading around the world. The one that infected Wolverine is slowly spreading around the world. And they've got this one super shield as this one supervillain who they're trying to use to stop the virus. And it's not working. It's all going to hell in a handbasket. There's a couple of great scenes in here that harken back to the Origin miniseries, and I guess they're sort of priming the readers for Origin 2, the next storyline that's going to reveal more of Wolverine's origin. So, you know, that, you know, there's definitely some tidbits in here for Wolverine fans. It's not bad. It definitely moves the story along because I think the next issue is going to be a lot of combat. You know, set it up right at the end of the issue.
Wait me when he finally dies. So that's all I got to say for Wolverine. X-Men number 6, part of the Battle of the Atom crossover, which I reviewed on DClickNation.com and PopCultureNetwork.com.
And an X-Men story I actually read.
Oh, go ahead, Dirt. Give us your thoughts.
Yes.
It's cool.
So you're liking
my thoughts. Yeah. I actually enjoyed this so much that I went ahead and read the issue that comes after this, or advanced review copy of it. I'll try not to spoil anything. I'll try to keep straight in my mind what happens in this one and that one. But the idea that you have these X-Men from the past that get brought to the present, and then you have this group, this X-Men group from the future that comes to the present to tell the X-Men from the past that they have to go back to the past. So you've got that time travel stuff that I love that time travel type stuff. I know it gives some people headaches, but I still think it's a lot of fun. But the thing is that there's something wrong with the X-Men from the future. And I believe in – somebody stop me if I'm getting ahead of myself here. But in this one you find out that the X-Men from the future aren't That's who correct. They say they
right,
are.
Not quite, right.
And this starts they turn on the X-Men in the That's present correct. And they are going to force the X-Men from the past to go back to the past. And you find out that the X-Men team in the future, there's like a real X-Men team. And then this team actually seems to be the evil mutant team or kind of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants from the future. And so, so that's where the war is starting to break out from what happens in the future. And I think it's in this one you find out that, is it Dazzler became president
Yeah.
In the future, she was going to be the first mutant president, but then there was this giant attack, killed a bunch of people, and that's what happened with the split. Where
right, that was the last issue.
Yeah,
right. That was an all-new X-Men.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So so this Brotherhood of Evil Mutants are basically the ones that have kind of lost their faith in humanity or their ability for mutants and humans to get along. But I'm still not quite sure why it's so important that the old – that why the X-Men from the past go back in the past.
Yeah.
To these, they haven't really explained why that's so important.
Right. I think they're working on the assumption that we all think that they should go to the past.
Yeah. Like, or return to the past. What does them staying in the present have to do with the bad stuff that happens with Dazzler and whatnot? I guess we'll have to keep reading and see.
I think what they're saying is that's a possible timeline where the old X-Men or the young X-Men stay here in the present and things happen from there. So what they're trying to do is basically prevent their own timeline from happening.
I could see that.
You know, that's my understanding of it so far. But, you know, I'll read this and we'll see what happens in the next issue and see how that works, you know, how that all fits together.
Let's see. Dirk Geek has had some Battle of the Atom tweets to us. He said, Battle of the Atom is so illogical. Are all the characters brain damaged / dimwitted? How they can salvage it in 3 issues.
Wow. That's harsh. Listen, Dark Geekers, you're probably right. I'm inclined to agree with you.
That should have his only Battle of the Atom tweet. Okay. I'm enjoying it. I'm going to see how it ends. Some issues are better than others, but we'll say that.
Agreed.
That's it for Marvel. I see New Paradigm Studios had Watson and Holmes #4, which I've been meaning to get into that series.
This one wraps up the first story arc. So it's going to continue after this, but they're going to change up some of the creative team. I'm trying to remember who they say is on for the next issue. But this one does wrap up. So if you want to, you know, check it out, the first 4 issues are going to get you the first story, and boy, do they ever lay on the mystery. Like they, you know, classic Sherlock Holmes style, there are, you know, some subtle clues that have been in the past. If you go back and look, they're there that you can follow along to the present. And then stuff that just randomly he happened to notice that no normal human being would ever catch, because he's Sherlock Holmes, he can do that. But I like the characterization. I like the idea of these characters. I like how the story is played out. You know, overall, it's just been a very fun book. I like mysteries where you can actually follow the trail, and especially in something like this where you can go back to the first issue and read it again, and certain things that didn't make sense kind of, you know, become clearer. Because they were leading up to something. They weren't just random things happening to keep the story moving. So I really enjoyed it overall. So, yeah, definitely if you thought about checking it out, now that the 4th issue's out and it wraps it up, just, you know, now's your chance to sit down and read all 4 in a row.
Okay. I have to try to make a mental note to go back and do that. Finishing stuff up here. Valiant had Archer and Armstrong #14. Which starts their set Civil War story arc, I believe. And I'm getting caught up with Archer and Armstrong. I think I'm maybe 1 issue behind. So that's kind of good. I'm enjoying the series, though, so looking forward to set Civil War. And Eternal Warrior #2.
What do you mean? It's not Sex Civil War? I hear you trying to enunciate that.
Yeah, I'm trying to pronunciate. And Eternal Warrior #2 came out. And there actually was Valiant news. They announced that they're going to leap into the future, into the year 4000 AD with Eternal Warrior, I think, #5.
Wow.
And so the future of the Valiant universe. That's kind of cool.
I tried reading this this issue. I admit I was exhausted by the time I got to this in my reading list. It was a little tough to read because the art kind of jumped, you know, there's a couple of artists on the book. So following the layouts and reading the story were kind of difficult. So I'm going to give it another try because I loved the first issue. So I'm willing to give this a try to see how the story is developing. But I, you know, just on first glance, I had to just click it off because I couldn't keep up with it. You know, I the art was that disconcerting.
I love that cover though.
The 8-bit.
Yeah, the variant cover is great.
Yeah, well, that's something Valiant's been doing a lot of with the variant covers, where they've got these pull box variants. So there's a set that they're only supposed to order for people who subscribe in advance. And then they've got these retro covers they've been doing. The last month was like old NES 8-bit artwork for the covers. Mm-hmm. And now this month it's going to be variants that are all Atari cartridges made into covers. So even if you're not reading the books, you might want to pick some of these variants up just to have in your collection because they look cool.
Yeah, that is very cool.
Okay. So now it's time for the click's pick of the week.
Well, hang on for one second. I mean, this is going to be a nothing story, but I just found this interesting. So earlier I was kind of looking through Pulse for stuff, and I saw an article from Bleeding Cool about Christopher Priest maybe doing a Quantum and Witty project. But they have quickly taken that down.
Oh, so, it's not on the site anymore?
No, it was like as soon as I clicked through, like right after it was gone. So,
wow.
It sounded like that was something coming from Comic-Con, but I don't know if there's something to that or maybe they just like oopsed.
Interesting for them to remove an article.
Yeah, really. Plus, it's coming from Creep Priest, who as far as I know, hasn't done anything recently, but he did one of my favorite arcs of Black Panther. So that's the only reason why I'm bringing it out. If he's doing something, I would check it out.
Okay. Sure.
Do you have a click of the week, Roddy Cat?
I do. I will have to agree with Agent 70 on Infinity 4, because that was a really good read.
It was fun.
Yeah.
Okay, I almost went with that. I'm gonna go with Wreck-It Girl number one.
Nice.
You were saying earlier you weren't sure about it.
Yeah, I was saying a review of it.
And I guess that's the non-superhero book of the week.
Yeah.
Actually, I've got a non-superhero book of the week, and it's one we haven't even talked about.
Uh oh.
Dun dun dun.
Null and void then.
Dexter number 4.
And his crotch in our face.
This Dexter series is based off the novels and not the TV show, but it's written by the guy who wrote the original novels, Jeff Lindsay. And he actually was on Reddit this week, and he was doing one of those I am threads, whatever, you can ask whatever questions and he'll answer as many as he can. And I actually asked him about the comic series. You know, were there any restrictions put on him by Marvel or was he free to do whatever he wanted? And he said that he loves working with Marvel. There were absolutely no restrictions. He could do whatever he wanted, which is something that he doesn't, you know, he wasn't able to do with the TV show. He was only a producer on the show for like the first season, and then he left because they wanted to do their own thing and get away from the novels. So this is kind of his chance to, you know, reach a different audience and do his own style of story. And in this series previously, we found somebody who Dexter is a bully at Dexter's school that Dexter was actually going to kill when he was in high school, and somebody walked in on him. And so he wasn't able to kill the guy. And now he's starting to find out that this guy who got away, it looks like he may also be a serial killer. There's something going on with him where he is killing people and getting away with it. And so now Dexter is trying to see if he can, you know, actually implicate the guy and maybe even implicate the guy on some of his stuff. You know, you never know what he can get away with. But as he goes to investigate, he actually gets kidnapped, and it looks like he is set to be the next victim for this killer. So the tables are being turned on him, and the guy is actually using Dexter's own MO to kidnap him. So it kind of goes a little deeper where maybe this guy has been watching Dexter for a long time and has been taking notes on who Dexter is and how he does things and is, you know, going to become a copycat of Dexter and kill Dexter in order to, you know, keep from being stopped from his own line of serial killing. So it's a lot of fun the way that they've set it up and the way that some of the stuff that you think is happening isn't really happening. And what you thought would never happen does actually happen to be true. And so I've just really enjoyed it, and it's really well structured and laid out. And so that's my pick of the week.
I can't say I'm surprised about Marvel saying that he could do what he want, because, well, it's not their it's not their property, realistically. I mean, they're licensed to do the thing, so I guess it's sure that we're going to let them go nuts with it.
Well,
that would probably be different if it was theirs.
I mean, as opposed to saying, you know, hey, we want to keep this for a teen audience, so, yeah, you know, not too much blood or not too much violence. And instead, he's been able to do a whole bunch of stuff that you wouldn't get away with in a normal, you know, T or T plus line, you know.
Yeah. I just want to say real quick, if anybody from Marvel is listening, probably, because, you know, they all listen. I don't love, let me rephrase that. Those Marvel AR things, it's kind of cool. You can see them on YouTube if you want to. Great. I've noticed they started putting them in, well, they haven't started, but they've been putting them into the book almost in a fashion like they used to do with the footnotes. And I kind of really wish they would put the footnotes back. Because I don't have time to be whipping out my phone and doing that AR, and I'm not even always in the right way to setting to do that with, because on a tablet it's kind of hard to set that up proper. But like I said, all this on YouTube, so it's irrelevant. But hey, bring back the footnotes, people.
I agree.
All right. I think that about does it for tonight. I want to thank everyone for tuning in live, if you happen to be tuning in live, or if you're listening to this podcast form or just on the YouTube channel. Thank you very much for tuning in. Let's see, follow us on our Twitter accounts, as you see on the screen here, if you're watching the video, of course. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at the Click Nation. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat, RODDYKAT. Agent 70 is at Agent_70, and Dirt is at PCN_Dirt. And something I need to start announcing at the beginning of the shows, if you are watching the pre-taped version and you want to tune in live, we're live every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
And give or take a few questions.
And you can ask questions. Send it to any of our @s and we'll get those mentions read on the show.
Or hashtag Comic Book Chronicles.
Yes, I need to start mentioning that. Comic Book Chronicles, I've got that nice column up in my tweet deck here.
So that's right.
See all those. Yeah, Roddy Cat's been, I see your Tumblr tweets.
So. Yeah, they're basically the ones that are coming from Instagram.
Instagram, so yeah.
I forgot to mention that.
Need to make sure I'm following you on Instagram.
All right.
Check on that. So with all that, we'll be back next week to talk the fallout from New York Comic Con and much more. Thank you once again for tuning to the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Yes, Dark One! What? Comic Book Chronicles has dopest trace chronic, yo! I'm steady tripping over them pages and dogging Adam Black. No. Yeah. Graphic or not, this is motherfucking comic book art. The man, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Jim Lee. Don't give a as long as them pages are hot and it's written by Chris Claremont, Chuck Jones, Alan Moore, or Grant Morrison.